And again, just remember that we're here for the upcoming Introduction to Superfund Redevelopment Initiative, or SRI, webinar for community involvement coordinators. And I'm going to turn things over to your session facilitator, Melissa Friedland, so that she can begin her portion of the talk. And Melissa, just so that you know, anybody who may have had difficulties, I'll be reaching out to them and making sure to resolve any issues that they're having getting connected.
Okay, thanks, Jean, and welcome, everybody. My name is Melissa Friedland, and I'm the Superfund Program Manager for Redevelopment here at EPA headquarters. I want to thank you for joining us. We're always excited to spend time talking about Superfund reuse and how supporting reuse plays a key role in improving the lives of communities and our cleanup process. Our mission at EPA, we always like to remind people, is to protect human health and the environment, and our hope is that by the end of all our discussions, we'll all see what a key part understanding and supporting land use plays in that mission, and we'll be ready and inspired to make it a part of the way we do business. This session is focused on giving you a primer on why we care about reuse, how reuse factors into your jobs as CRCs, the key tools and guidance for incorporating reuse into your work, reuse tools and information for EPA and communities, and how to get reuse support for your site. EPA has actively supported reuse through the Superfund Redevelopment Initiative since 1999, and the resulting success stories never fail to inspire those of us who have supported this effort. The Superfund Redevelopment Initiative, or SRI, plays a key role in supporting reuse as a priority at EPA. Restoring, revitalizing, and supporting economically productive new uses to Superfund sites is a vital part of EPA's work. Communities have been reusing Superfund sites, cleaned up sites, for many years, and SRI supports communities' efforts to return Superfund sites to productive use. So our mission is to work with communities and other partners in considering future use opportunities and integrating appropriate reuse options into the cleanup process. At the national level, we have policies, tools, and performance measures. And at the regional level, we offer site-specific support, and we're very clear on communicating our lessons learned. As we mentioned earlier, SRI started 20 years ago. As a matter of fact, we're celebrating our 20th anniversary this year, just next month. So the question is, why do we still have an initiative sitting around after 20 years? So there are a lot of reasons, and the bullets on this slide are just a few of them. I can go over them briefly, that demands on land means that long-forgotten sites are frequently coming back online. Leaving waste in place means needing long-term stewards in perpetuity. We're finding new contaminants, new pathways, changing standards, remedy failures, and land use changes. All those mean that we have to regularly evaluate and think about how sites are used, which we do with our five-year reviews. And we have the opportunities to support newly listed sites the right way from the start. And communities are still looking for information and assistance. But one good reason not listed on this slide is that despite our knowledge of the Superfund program, many people are still surprised to learn of the Superfund site in their backyard, and many communities are still looking for inspiration when it comes to tackling the stigma left behind by Superfund. So having this initiative helps us and communities draw on a wealth of experience and inspiration. Communities do not need to reinvent the wheel. Many options and opportunities are out there. So Jean, do we know if Frank is on the line? Otherwise, I'll proceed.
I do not believe that Frank is currently on the line, so I might encourage you to proceed in his place.
Okay, great. All right. So what I'd like to talk about is help people understand how reuse information fits into the cleanup process and how reuse can benefit communities in multiple ways. Reuse can be a silver lining for communities and sites. And thinking about reuse is an important part of doing your job well. So what do we mean when we say talking about reuse? It means talking to people about their communities and their future. It means getting people involved in the cleanup and decisions that will impact their lives even after EPA's work is done. and it means giving stakeholders and community members something positive to discuss. So before we show you how reuse plays into the cleanup process, I want to introduce you to a very important term, which is the reasonably anticipated future land use, otherwise known as the RAFLU. So as a general rule, it usually means something broad, like commercial, industrial, residential, ecological, recreational, or public use. But there are many variations and combinations of how communities can view future land use, and the more you know, the more and better you can plan. So this image is an overview of the cleanup process, and reuse information can be integrated into any stage of the process, but as you'll see, having the information earlier helps EPA make better informed decisions about the remedy and cleanup goals. So really, the earlier we have the information, the better we'll be. But even if a community or interested reuse stakeholder comes to us years after we've implemented a cleanup, we can still collect reuse information and have it inform the cleanup process. Incorporating reuse or thinking about reuse as part of cleanup is a team effort and something that you as the CIC will need to collaborate on with the RPM to make sure everyone's on the same page. So some key remedial areas informed by reuse considerations include land use considerations, which are critical to a site's baseline risk assessment, identifying the exposure pathways evaluated in the baseline risk assessment. These are determined by land use assumptions, and applying the results of the risk assessment to aid in determining the degree of remediation necessary to ensure long-term protection. Reuse provides business opportunities and results in a variety of local economic benefits. These include jobs and income, recreational and ecological amenities, and increased value of nearby real estate and generation of local property taxes. So we'll share some of SRI's specific tools later in the presentation, but I think it's useful to look at these numbers in conjunction with the other benefits to see. They're tangible and substantial, and they show that reuse isn't just about helping business. It's part of a larger package that makes supporting reuse win-win. So on that note, I'd like to hand things over to Fran Costanzi, who's the Superfund Redevelopment Initiative Coordinator for Region 8. And Fran is going to introduce us to the key tools for involving communities in cleanup and reuse decisions. Thank you.
Thank you, Melissa. Hi, I'm Fran Costanzi, and I am an RPM here in Region 8, as well as the Superfund Redevelopment Initiative Coordinator. And I'm going to be talking about some key tools for involving communities in cleanup decisions. So we're going to start to dig in, but first I wanted to say that what we've seen over and over again in the various regions is that when we start talking about reuse at sites, we change the entire dynamic of the site. If you have a community that's anxious or angry or concerned about what's happening, by talking about reuse and getting them involved in thinking about it, it changes their vision for the site. They start thinking about possibilities instead of the negativity. And so that's part of what we're hoping to work with you on and help you to get more tools to do as we move forward. So there's some reuse guidances, and they're really very helpful. The first one came out in 1995, and this is a directive that talked about how we consider land use in the CERCLA remedy selection process. There's really two primary objectives to this directive. The first was to promote early discussions with local land use planning authorities, local officials, and the public regarding what the reasonably anticipated future land use possibilities are for a site. And that's the RAFLU that Melissa just spoke on. Secondly, the directive promotes the use of information to help formulate realistic assumptions regarding the future land use of a site and clarifies how these assumptions can fit in and influence the baseline risk assessment, the development of alternatives, and the CERCLA remedy selection process. So for example, if it's going to continue to be an industrial property, as an RPM, I would approach things differently than if that industrial property has a great likelihood of being residential. And that will then play into how we go about sampling at the site, doing the risk assessment, and ultimately it could impact the cleanup. So important information to know as you're going through the process. The 2010 EPA Reuse Directive also instructs EPA regions to consider and implement reuse at Superfund properties throughout all stages of the cleanup. So not only during the remedial investigation feasibility study, but as Melissa spoke, if something comes up later on in the process, even at deleted sites, we have ways that we may be able to consider and help support that reuse. So the 2010 guidance discusses the use of reuse assessments, which we'll be talking about shortly, as well as reuse plans, what that difference is, the role of community involvement, and reuse as it relates to the remedial action objectives, remedy selection, post-recorded decision changes, institutional controls. So these guidances can be used to illustrate how EPA views reuse as an established part of the cleanup process, that we understand how reuse fits into the NCP, the National Contingency Plan, and other agency policy, because reuse is a part of the Superfund process. We can actually do reuse assessments, which we'll be talking about, and we should be doing them as a part of the remedial investigation feasibility study, and we can fund them using Superfund dollars, we can cost recover. So all important things that show that it's actually a part of our process. We have in the box there some examples of things you can do at a site that can help promote reuse depending on the site, which is why it's important for the RPM and community involvement coordinator to work together. But perhaps you could just move the waste to a different location or consolidate it differently, and that could help encourage reuse or free up an area to not have institutional controls, which might promote reuse in that area. It could be where we put wells, and perhaps there's flexibility on where those wells could be located. So again, that could help promote reuse. Or we've placed clean utility corridors and landfill caps or other waste areas, and that allows for repairs to be done to utilities or installation of utilities like water lines or electric without actually damaging the remedies. So there's some examples of possibilities at site, again, that must be coordinated with whatever remedy EPA is selecting at the site. So two tools for getting reuse information, the reuse assessments and reuse plans. We'll be talking about them in the subsequent slides, but basically both of these can help you get to the reasonably anticipated future in land use. And the picture in the room there is one of the visioning sessions that we did up in Libby, Montana, that Jennifer will be speaking about shortly. So reuse assessment, there's a guidance on this that you have the title and the link there on your screen. And I would encourage you to pull this up. It's very concise, very easy to read. But the reuse assessment guidance defines that reuse assessment is a part of the remedial process. It helps collect and evaluate information that helps us develop assumptions about what the RAFLU, the reasonably anticipated future land use or uses, is at a site. It's something that you would then put in your administrative record and would help support the remedy that ultimately EPA selects. So by getting this information, this is stuff that the RPM can actually use to feed into the conceptual site model, to look at potential future exposure pathways, which could impact how we do the risk assessment. It could change how we sample at a site, because you might sample very differently, again, if you're looking at small parcels for residential versus a large industrial area. And it could also change the alternatives we develop and actually what remedy we end up selecting. As Melissa stated, the reuse assessment usually gets us those broad categories. Is it residential? Is it recreational? Is it likely to be commercial, industrial? Is it a mixed use which has multiples of those? But it gives us more of that broader brush of what the likely anticipated uses are. Reuse planning, on the other hand, is another tool where we can dig down a little deeper, so to speak, and actually get more of a picture of what the possibilities that are at a site. And this is really important because often if a site has been one thing for a very long time, it was a factory, it was a smelter, whatever it was, people stop seeing the possibilities. It's just human nature because that's what it was. And we have communities where people want that factory to reopen or that business to reopen, and they're not able to think through what else it could be and what else could be there. So as a part of reuse planning, we do things such as facilitated visioning and other techniques that we'll have examples of later that help people think through what are the future possibilities that can then inform not only those future possibilities, but also how we would select our remedy or do our site cleanup. It evaluates remedial considerations, site features, land use context, community goals. It looks at such things as, are there interstates nearby that might be useful? Are there other amenities? What does the community need? Does it need more supermarkets? Does it need more jobs? Does it need more parks? And that gets factored into the reuse planning. And we don't need to wait till the cleanup's over. That's really important. Some RPMs, and I am one, think that, no, let me get the cleanup done and then I'll think about this reuse stuff. While we can do it later in the process, it's so much better if you're able to start it sooner. And again, that changes the dialogue with the community and the stakeholders. And that's a part of why we do reuse planning. Number one, it's part of our mission, and it feeds into our actual Superfund thought process of how to do remedy selection and cleanup. It can often help move towards remedial action. It can really change the community expectations and dynamics. When you really get into it, especially in these times of reduced funds, sometimes it brings in a developer who's willing to actually do part of the cleanup. And that may help us fund a cleanup that we may not be able to do for a longer period of time. It also cuts down on other things, such as if the site was a fund lead site that's transferring to the state for them to do operation and maintenance that the state has to pay. If someone's redeveloping it, that could either get rid of the state's O&M costs or it could reduce them. And we found that if people are actually out in a site, there all the time, they develop an ownership and a stewardship rather than it being a vacant site with a fence around it that is just an ongoing cost. So with that, I'd like to hand it over to Jennifer Harrison, who is a CIC that I've worked with a lot on different reuse sites.
And Fran, just before Jennifer begins, I'm sorry to interject. This is Jean Balance, again, the technical moderator in the background. I just wanted to give a brief update for those of you who may be on the telephone lines. There was a server error on Adobe's end. So it's nothing that you're doing. It's nothing that we're doing. It's the actual corporate server that we use for webinars has had an issue. We apologize for that problem. It's okay. So there were a handful of people that got in before the issue happened. And if you got in before the issue happened, you're in. And if you tried to get in after the issue happened, you get a message that it's exceeding capacity. So we have a support team on. I just wanted everyone to know the entire session is being recorded. So if you are connected and you're able to watch through Adobe, we can continue to let things run and the entire session will be recorded. For those of you who were unable to get in before this issue happened, we did email out an alternative way to participate. So a copy of the slides has been sent, as well as a link to a video that we'll be playing back later. And then I provided you all with a call-in option. And I know many of you have already dialed in and sent me emails saying that you're able able to listen by phone. So first of all, I greatly apologize for that disruption. I appreciate everybody's patience while we work to fix this. This is the first one I've ever had happen in all these years I've been doing these. But if my presenters could do one thing for me just to help, knowing that there's many people just on the phones and they're kind of manually flipping along, if you could just say next page or reference your slide number, that would help those who are on the phones kind of follow along a lot easier. So again, thanks everybody for your patience, and if I get any word on a fix, I'll come back on the line and let everybody know.
Great. Well, hi everybody, this is Jennifer Harrison. And as Fran mentioned, I'm a community involvement coordinator in Region 8. And I've had the opportunity to work on the Libby Asbestos site, Superfund site, for 7 years and help the community with cleanup there. But I have to say, I have really enjoyed the opportunity to work on reuse at this site. It's just been really fascinating and exciting. So next page, next slide. So a little site history. For those of you who are not familiar with Libby and the community, it is located in the northwest corner of Montana, not far from the Idaho Panhandle and the Canadian border. It has historically been a mining and logging community, and I would describe it as a company town during the 25 or 30 years that W.R. Grace operated a nearby vermiculite mine. The photos here show a former export plant right in the middle of town where contamination served as an exposure pathway for community members, including kids playing baseball. Next slide. So we're talking about vermiculite. You see a picture there on the slide under a microscope. It is a type of asbestos that is toxic and highly friable form. And we refer to it as Libby Ampable Asbestos. The vermiculite mine itself is just 5 miles from town. And every time the workers went to put a shovel in the earth or process the vermiculite in some way, shape, or form, it became airborne. And as was common at the time with mines, the tailings were shared with community members for use as fill in their yards, for roads, for paths. It was used at the track, where kids ran track, in schools, and as we saw in the previous photo, it was used for the ball field. So it was just about everywhere. Next slide. So this is just an overview of the entire site. Today, cleanup has been completed in Libby and in the nearby town of Troy. Troy was a town where a lot of workers who worked at the mine would commute over to Libby about 20 miles away. So even though we didn't have as many issues in Troy, we still had some contamination there, and a lot of it was just shared by the workers bringing it home. So the site itself includes, well, you see all the different operable units. The one up in the right-hand corner is the former mine. Jean, may we have the arrow?
Yes, we're going to turn that pointer on right now, and if you could verbally annotate for those who are on the phone, that'd be very helpful.
Okay, great. So you can see, basically all the different operable units. We've got the residential area, operable unit 4 in the left corner, and that's the main town. We've got the industrial park where we did a lot of reuse work. This map doesn't really show the city very close up, so yeah, it's probably not going to be worth really walking through all these different areas. But you can see it's a big area we're talking about. You know, the mine is 5 miles outside of town in the upper right-hand corner. Heavily forested all around. The Kootenai River runs right through the town. You see it on the northern edge of town. The former export plant was right in town. We talked about that. The railroad was treated as a separate operable unit. But we're at the point now where everything has been cleaned up. We're still working on institutional controls, except for the mine site, and that is on that's on a parallel path, but it looks like we're close to having the investigation there be complete. So next slide. So the site itself was placed on the national priorities list in 2002. And in 2009, for the first time in the history of our agency, EPA declared a public health emergency in Libby, which provides federal health care assistance to victims of asbestos-related disease. Sadly, thousands have been sickened and hundreds have died as a result of this type of asbestos. We have completed cleanup at more than 2,600 properties after investigating about 7,700 properties that we identified. We are, like I said, close to completing the investigation at the mine, but the cleanup's on a separate track. Last fall, we had a really cool, I guess I would call that a reuse event, where we recognized community members at an award ceremony for their role in turning the former export plant into a stunning park. And I'll talk about that a little later. So next slide. EPA has supported the Libby community with a number of reuse opportunities throughout the years. While it's important and helpful to begin reuse work early, as Fran was talking about, the reality is that sometimes priorities shift in the community as a cleanup is completed. I also think it's often easier for the community to get excited about reuse as cleanup completion becomes a reality. Next slide. So this is the Riverfront Park project. As we mentioned, we collaborated with the community to determine a plan and plan reuse at the former export plant. And this is the area where that W.R. Grace used to prepare and ship this asbestos material and what was turned into attic insulation and building materials all over the country. And I think it's international as well. EPA conducted the cleanup in this area, but we also helped with grading of the area, and we even developed a boat ramp area with the grading, since our trucks were already going to be there. And it's just a really majestic, beautiful site because it sits along the Kootenai River. Next slide. The park itself opened officially in 2013, and today it has become what I think I would have to say a crown jewel for Libby. It is used for community gatherings, for weddings, for celebrations. They have a blues fest. It's a multi-use recreation area. There's a pavilion, a memorial, parking, and river access, along with picnic tables. We've even had an annual community involvement meeting at that pavilion. Not a bad place to hang out for a public meeting, I might add. Next slide. So this gets into our seeds and the more recent reuse work that we did for the Libby community. In 2017, as we neared the cleanup completion, we were able to get a regional seed to support a long-term visioning effort for a blighted area historically known as the Simpson Mill, an old lumber mill. Next slide. Our contractor, Skio and Associates, was really helpful in assisting EPA in this whole process and in helping us to convene a local visioning workshop to determine reuse priorities for what is a 400-acre parcel that is chock-full of redevelopment opportunities. Skio, our contractor, was especially helpful in documenting the conditions and the assets of the site that they now call Kootenai Business Park. And I'll just note on here some of the conditions and assets that were documented is that there's a 100,000-square-foot vacant industrial warehouse. And we came to find out later in this process that it's really not that common to have a building this big that's just open and ready for reuse by a company. So that was something that the community chose to focus on. Next slide. It's worth mentioning that Libby has a second Superfund site called the Libby Groundwater Site, where groundwater was contaminated from the former mill operation. The groundwater site shares the same footprint as an area of the asbestos site. As you can imagine, there was a need for extensive coordination between property owners, elected officials, and other stakeholders regarding the current and future use. And as part of the visioning process, we actually identified a parcel where the community decided in the future they may want retail or even residential. And I think we ended up going back and doing a little bit more confirmation sampling. So this process can definitely influence, as Fran was talking about, future use. One of our biggest challenges was getting agreement on the priorities from longtime board members for this new business park. It's a quasi-governmental organization that manages the industrial business park. So we'll get, this is the next slide where we get into phase two. We, in talking to the board members and local officials after our initial effort and initial working session, the board members and the local officials, they really appreciated the help in identifying the reuse goals, but they felt overwhelmed. They couldn't agree on which priorities to pursue first with their competing time and resources. We decided to conduct another workshop in pursuit of what we called an implementation plan. But this time, with local stakeholder agreement and interest, we decided to invite regional economic development experts. Next slide. In the effort to help Libby stakeholders get clarity on their best opportunities for attracting business, our contractor did an analysis of strengths and weaknesses, otherwise known as a SWOT analysis. This helped the community think carefully about their competitive advantages over why would a business choose Libby over someplace else in Montana or the region. And just some examples of the strengths that I'll call out is it's great access to major river, the Kootenai River, highway, major highway, BNSF Railroad, existing infrastructure, sewer water, existing business on site, and of course, the Superfund cleanup for asbestos was complete. Some of the weaknesses to deal with, infrastructure is aging, inadequate sewer and potable water infrastructure, and it's next to a floodplain, or it's in a floodplain, I should say. Next slide. So this is just a continuation of the SWOT analysis. Again, a very comprehensive process, and so the analysis not only looks at the strengths and weaknesses, but also the opportunities and threats. And an example of an opportunity, for example, they identified that it's flat, available land, again, good access to infrastructure. One of the threats, though, to redevelopment is visual blights. The land had industrial, just old, pieces of equipment, rusting, not attractive. And they did not have an attractive gateway. Even though the land sits right next to the highway, as you come into town from a place where visitors access Glacier National Park just an hour away, it didn't look attractive. And there's, of course, limited funding. Next slide. Reuse suitability. So our contractor was also really helpful in just identifying suitability for the various parcels of property. Really helped us look carefully at the maps and do a site tour and help us to understand what was the best use of this land. And this included industrial and manufacturing related uses, as well as new areas for potential commercial. And we also agreed, and the stakeholders really wanted to bring in more recreational use. And, of course, infrastructure enhancements were also recommended to make the business park more attractive to future development. Next page, an action plan. So the phase two working session ended up being a huge success. And I say that because it resulted in a clear action plan that gave local stakeholders and board members clarity on what to tackle first. The event that we held happened in late 2017, but since then there has been a lot of progress toward economic development. The community is engaged in discussions with a major development, well, they actually have interest from a major buyer for that 100,000-foot building that I mentioned. They are also, there's ongoing work to make the business park more accessible from the main highway, and I just learned that there is a current effort underway to remove some of that industrial debris and junk to make the business park more attractive. I also just learned that the community is in the process of building a berm to make sure that the floodplain is not a concern for future development. So lots of progress just in the past year and a half. A copy of the action plan is provided in the resources area if somebody wants to access it. Next page. So the event was also a success because of the regional economic development experts. They really felt honored to be invited, and they showed up despite a snowstorm. I mean, it was a pretty big snowstorm. they inspired the participants by helping them to understand the importance of working collaboratively to become the community that they want to be. Next page. After the event, one of the experts shared his extremely optimistic observations of Libby and her workshop in a column that he regularly contributed to in the Missoulian, a major Montana newspaper. And his column was all about encouraging redevelopment. The event also enjoyed positive news coverage locally, and we had a news segment from the TV station in Kalispell, which is about an hour away. They also made their way through the snowstorm. I get that it's Montana, these are hardy people, they're used to snow, but I was surprised they showed up. It was really awesome. Next slide. Some more inspiration. I was really happy to see how our relationship with the mayor and just some of the local officials changed as a result of the second workshop in particular. When we started that morning for that workshop, the mayor was on his cell phone a lot. He didn't seem very engaged. By the end of the event, later that day, he was grinning ear to ear with enthusiasm and appreciation. And he was asking me, so can you explain this? How is it that EPA gets to help us with redevelopment? This is awesome. It was really, really a great boost, I think, for everybody. I think last slide, lessons learned. So some sites, as I mentioned, require more than one round of reuse planning. It's really important to work closely with your state and local officials and involve technical experts who can mesh with the community. And when I mention technical experts, I'm thinking about the regional economic development experts. There was local concern that they wouldn't want to come to Libby since we couldn't cover their time or their travel. But we learned that they wanted to help, and they really validated the ideas put forth by the community. You just never know until you ask. And one more lesson learned is that you can't expect to announce a reuse event and have everybody just show up. We spent a lot of time in advance figuring out who was crucial to have in the room and then how to get them there. In some cases, we asked a local official if they'd reach out to someone for us. We also met in person with the key stakeholders well in advance to make sure that we understand their goals, to make sure those were reflected. And we called a lot of people. A lot of people. with that, I think that's all I have to say, and happy to take questions.
Okay, very briefly.
Go ahead and make your
name. Yeah, thank you. So real quick, I just wanted to give everybody a quick update. Some of you may be just diligently listening on the phone and may not be checking your email, but I just wanted to let everybody know we were able to resolve that technical glitch, and the Adobe Connect room has been unlocked. So I've emailed everyone who registered with instructions, again, reminding you how you can check in. So if you are currently listening on the phone and you want to give Adobe Connect a try for that more interactive experience, please, by all means, check your email and follow the instructions. It looks like we've got another 20 people who just hopped in, and people have been responding that the connection is working. So again, my apologies for that brief technical disruption. Everything was recorded, so if there was something that you missed earlier, it will be part of that archive, and you can play it back. You are welcome to stay on the phone lines. If you just are connected that way and you prefer to listen that way, that's perfectly fine, but the Adobe Connect room is open. I will remind those of you who are on the Adobe room, you can continue to send in questions and comments for our speaker using the Q&A window in the bottom right corner of your screen. And then at the appropriate times for a break, we'll go ahead and read through questions so that our presenters can answer them out loud. And that's all I had for the moment, Melissa.
Okay, thanks. I think this would be a good time to turn it over to Angela.
Okay, thank you, and thank you, Jennifer. That was a great presentation. I remember following Libby. That's a huge undertaking. Hello, everyone. My name is Angela Miller, and I'm a CIC in Region 4, and if you can't tell, it's down south. Ha-ha. Anyway, I've been a CIC for 20 years, and I just absolutely love my job. I love doing what I do. I love working in these communities. And this community right here, I've been involved with them since the late 1990s, and they have been just a tremendous blessing to me. We've actually done life together. They've been with me through a wedding, a baby, and a divorce. And we just supported each other. We just became family, and it's just been a true blessing to me. They're truly one in a million, and that's really important when you're going through cleanup and a reuse. Before I get started with my presentation, I do want to mention that the Wolf Oak Chemical Works site is shared as an example in the Reuse and Redevelopment Planning Community Involvement Tool. There's a link to access the tool on your webinar screen in the resources area. So the site is located in Fort Valley, Georgia, the absolute best peaches ever. Every time I went down there, people in the office said, do not come back without peaches. They were so good. It's a 31-acre site. 18 acres of it was a former Wolf Oak plant, and 13 acres of that was surrounding residential and commercial properties. The residential properties, we cleaned their attics and cleaned up yards front and or back. And I'm not sure if you're familiar or have been in South Georgia, but it's very, very hot. This cleanup went on during the summer, and our contractors were literally in the attics cleaning with personal protective equipment that had ice packs. The ice packs would only last about 20 minutes, so as soon as it melted, they had to come out. It was extremely hot. But historically, the pesticides were produced, formulated, blended, and packaged at the site. So the prevailing wind carried the contamination inside the gables, and that's how it ended up in the attics. The remedy for OU3 addressed arsenic-contaminated soils and the buildings and some debris from the former site. The contaminated materials were consolidated and used as fill in a 4-acre capped area. We'll see some pictures on that later. The record of decision for OU3 was signed in 1998, and in 2004 we amended that ROD that addressed changes in the ARARs for arsenic soils. And in 2009 we had an explanation of significant difference that addressed an increased volume of contaminated soil that needed to be excavated and treated, changes to soil treatment levels, and changes to methods of disposal for the contaminated soil that we didn't anticipate. It was a large, you'll see how big it was. There's equipment and people down in the hole, so we ended up removing a lot more than we expected. And the reuse planning process at the site was initiated in the spring of 2006. And the goals of this process were to integrate the remedial action objectives and cleanup plans with the community's future land use goals. I believe it was Fran that touched on, if you know what the future reuse goals are, that helps you with the remedial design for the remediation. You can help each other out. We accomplished this through a stakeholder engagement process. We integrated community reuse goals by site and land use analysis with future land use scenarios and EPA's long-term planning efforts to protect human health and the environment. And this process created opportunities to share with community members and EPA representatives, local government, local government leaders, and led to positive outcomes. And that the positive outcomes gives the community hope to focus on, positive things to focus on. The following slides are going to be how the community-based process led to the development of the site's reuse and its framework. So we knew that there were already two really strong existing community groups, and we needed them for this strong community-based process. So SRI and Region 4 worked together to design a reuse planning process to build on the capacity of these two existing groups. One of the groups was Wolf Oak Citizens Response Group, and it was concerned citizens that held a technical assistance grant for the Wolf Oak site. And I believe it's one of the highest paid TAG grants in the nation. They had the absolute best technical advisor ever. If you looked in the dictionary at technical advisor, you would see his picture. He was just amazing. He worked very, very well with the community and helping them to understand, and worked very well with EPA. But this group, WCRG, had already been meeting for about 11 years regarding the site issues. And then the other group is Wolf Oak Alliance, which was a much broader community group. That group was started by Mayor Stumbo. When I started in the late 1990s, he had just started this group. So I believe I was like at the second meeting that that they had had. But this alliance included representatives from EPA and the state, WCRG, elected officials, state legislative representatives, local business owners, city and county agencies, and we met every 4 to 6 weeks religiously. There's something to say about breaking bread with people, true scripture. The mayor jumped on that wagon and started having his secretary make lunch for us. And when I say lunch, I mean a spread, like homemade, like a Baptist church homecoming of just food. He felt like if we stayed together and ate together, we got to know each other more, and it was just a great opportunity to fellowship and talk. But this is truly a power group, and honestly, we're still making decisions that continue to change the world this very day from this site. But it was a significant amount of knowledge, and they understood the site history and EPA's roles in the cleanup, because we met so often and we were so honest and we were so transparent about what EPA could do and what we couldn't do and why we couldn't do it. And then we had the technical assistance, technical advisor that, you know, would help the community understand why EPA could or couldn't do anything. But this group also had the capacity to conduct broader public outreach to the community. So SRI designed a 9-month process that was hosted by the Wolf Oak Alliance group so that we could share existing knowledge, we could learn about the site and reuse opportunities and constraints, and develop a reuse framework for the site. And it's really good to be honest and transparent about the constraints, because you can set expectations. And not give them, you know, really high hopes. I mean, I believe in reaching for the stars, but sometimes, you know, you don't have a ladder. The key outcomes, the reuse planning process led to several key outcomes for EPA and the City of Fort Valley. For EPA, the process identified potential future land use considerations that would support the site's cleanup. Through the site analysis and reuse goals, community members envisioned opportunities to return the site to productive use that the city could actually benefit from, instead of seeing a cleaned up site sitting inside the fence. This really helped to alleviate residents' concerns about the site's stigma. Another key outcome from the process was to develop long-term stewardship strategies, and you can see a list of them there, but the first one was to help transition vacant properties into active ownership. And then Fort Valley would need to keep in mind considerations for actually acquiring properties at the site. And the institutional controls, the plan for restricted use areas, and a stewardship group to see through implementation of the reuse framework. And the site today, I love it. I love going out there today and just seeing all the changes. And they celebrate everything. They celebrate everything, and they go all out for the celebrations, and I love that. And I was a big part in helping them to celebrate. And the mayor was very, very picky and actually wanted me to do invitations for one celebration. And I'm having trouble, I'm sorry, with my screen. I can't see my slides, so I'm just going to go for my hard copies. So today in Fort Valley, they have a library that was built, thank you, they have a library that was built on a part of the site that's reused. There's office space and there's a welcome center. It's a true testament to the success and collaboration between EPA and the community. Bluebird actually uses part of the paved area to park their buses, and that was one of the reuse opportunities that they've been talking about for a while, because the community actually could get money from that, so they were excited about that. And then the city of Fort Valley, they host several festivals on this site, including the ComSouth Hambone Jam. Now, that's a southern festival. That's and they have an annual fall festival. People come from all over the place for these festivals and barbecue competitions. And I'm telling you, you will not find a more beautiful scene than Fort Valley at Christmas. It's just a beautiful place. EPA continues to work with the community to integrate local reuse priorities as part of the cleanup for the remaining parts of the site. We've got one more operable unit that we need to make a decision on, so it's kind of bittersweet. And my next, this is a video that we did. It's called Life After Superfund. It is a beautiful story, and it's 15 minutes, so I think we have enough time to watch it all. If we run out of time, I really do encourage you to go to the resource page and check the video out. It's got community members, the mayor, the RPM, and it has Jim Wolford, and it also has the beautiful Empress herself, Melissa Friedland. This is actually where I met her, is on this site. So I think Jean is going to start the video for us.
I am.
Great.
Thank you. So very quickly, just a quick reminder, the audio for these videos plays back through your computer speaker. So if you happen to be on the phone lines, you'll want to adjust your computer audio appropriately. Gentle reminder to all of my presenters, you'll want to be sure to make sure that your telephone lines are muted right now, and then you can turn the volume up on your computer to hear that audio. For those of you who have any difficulty playing the video back, because it is a longer video, we've included a direct link in the Q&A window, so you can always play it back right from YouTube. It is a publicly available EPA video.
My name is John Stumbo, and I'm the mayor of the city of Fort Valley, Fort Valley, USA, as we call it. It just happens to be located in Georgia. When I came into office 10 years ago, I inherited the Wolf Oak Superfund site.
The mission of Superfund is to clean up the nation's worst toxic waste sites and to return them to beneficial use to help out communities.
The Wolf Oak Chemical site was a pesticide formulating and manufacturing facility. Started in around 1910. Some of the contaminants were buried in the soil. Some of it was wind blown over in the neighborhoods. And our primary contaminants are arsenic. There's also VHCs, alpha, beta, gamma, and delta VHCs, We have some DDT and other pesticides and herbicides.
One of the difficulties was that because of the heat in the summertime in Georgia, much of their operation was under roof, but the sides were open. And a lot of this material was mixed by conveyor belt systems. And so we had wind that would come through the facility and scatter this arsenic-laced dust across part of the community. So we ended up with an 18-acre or so concentrated site where the operation was, which is actually the formerly declared Superfund site. But beyond that, we had 60 or 80 homes and yards that were contaminated to one level or another by this, the blowing of the arsenic dust. A concerned citizens group was developed called the Woolfolk Citizens Response Group. And that was made up of leaders in the community, principally from the area that was most affected residentially by the Superfund site. And they became a citizens advocacy group. And obviously there was a lot of contention between the potentially responsible party at that time, which was Canada and Georgia, and this citizens group, and then EPA as well.
At the time we had one question, which has served as the basis of our involvement. That question is, what has this thing done to this town and its people? And our basic task was to gain information, interpret the information as best we could, and relay that information to the general public in this town, primarily the impacted community. We didn't know at the time what our involvement would net.
The EPA was beginning to develop its records on decision, what kind of process it would go through in each one of these operating units to remediate. And they had test results that Canada and Georgia had furnished originally to the Environmental Department in Georgia. But those test results were suspect. And I don't think that the citizens group felt that they were accurate, because I don't think they thought that the tests were, first of all, broad enough in scope, and second of all, they questioned that the fact that maybe there was more contamination here than what those results showed, that somehow the potential party had minimized the test results for their own benefit.
As a technical advisor, I'm called in to interface between EPA and the community to make sure the community understands why EPA is doing a given thing, how the cleanup is going, why it's sometimes difficult to dispose of great piles of dirt. When I came on board to work as a tag advisor, I was not allowed to do testing, but I was able to push EPA to do testing separate and apart from the responsible party, from their consultants. Pretty quickly it was found that there were a lot of contaminated properties in the area that people should not be walking around on or growing flowers or using. One of the surprises is that we have found arsenic in places we did not expect to find arsenic, which has changed the nature of the project.
We were told that if you would dig about 3 inches and replace that soil, if the soil showed that there was contamination, that would be sufficient. And of course, there were some of us who knew that contamination would certainly be deeper than 3 inches. And we finally got some people to say, well, perhaps 6 inches deep. And there were those of us who said there's no way that contaminants wouldn't penetrate the soil below 6 inches.
One of the things that was decided at the time I came into office was that it might be useful to set up an organization that would meet periodically, and we called it the Alliance. And the idea was that we would bring all the stakeholders into the meeting, and we'd meet once a month or once every 6 weeks.
It was a matter of sharing information with the community itself and answering whatever the questions were as best as could be answered. And it was then that things started to be understood better and, of course, accepted better than what it had been.
The second phase in the operation is once you test, which is number one, then you start to remediate. Well, what I discovered was that remediation, number one, is extremely expensive when you're talking about toxic substances. Number two, we had the potentially responsible party who went bankrupt at this time. So we were left without a potentially responsible party. So that meant then that our site was going to compete not only in the EPA region headquarters in Atlanta, but also across the country for Superfund remediation dollars. If it were not for the EPA and Congress's willingness to fund the Superfund, this town could have never have done what needed to be done there. I mean, there's no way we could have afforded to do that. And we have been blessed over and over and over again by state and federal people who have come here to help us.
EPA has cleaned yards, cleaned properties, businesses, dug up a couple of businesses very extensively, cleaned a fairground. We've had good help from ATSCR, Centers for Disease Control, EPA, EPD, state health departments, and everyone local. There has not been any local opposition since we formed the alliance.
Redevelopment, third phase, is very much our responsibility, as opposed to EPA's or somebody else, okay? The first two things have been EPA's responsibility, to test and then to come up with a remediation plan and complete it. Redevelopment is coming. One of the operating units that was developed around two buildings. One was the desire of the public library system in the county to build a major library in Fort Valley to replace an older one. And secondly, we had a home that was actually built after the Civil War, but it looks very antebellum, which we wanted to use as a public agency facility to house our Chamber of Commerce and our Development Authority and so on and so forth. And it was contaminated. Early in the process of the Superfund, we were able to get the funds to clean up that house. Right across the street from the actual site itself, the Superfund site, was a piece of property that was contaminated. And what was there needed to be torn down. So the library was able to get that site at a very reasonable land cost, obviously, in exchange for which they had built a beautiful brick library. And it's another one of the success stories of this project, because EPA worked really hard to get the site cleaned up and to get it in a position where the library could acquire it and develop their building there, instead of having to wait 10 or 15 years for the rest of this process to work itself out.
My name is Gilda Stanberry, and I'm the director of Peach Public Libraries, and our headquarters is here in Fort Valley. Well, my first issue is always about protective. What am I bringing people into? Not only what I would be bringing the public into, but perhaps my greater concern was the people that would work here every day. And I also looked at it from the perspective of being a mother of a small child at that point. What would I be doing to expose myself and my child? And therefore, it makes it very real when I look at other people's children and start thinking, how does this pertain? You look at it at a very personal level.
We didn't have to wait to renovate the Troutman House or to build the library. We were able to get, with the EPA's help, those things done early on. So what that sent was a message to the people that, hey, there is life after Superfund. We can do something to make that kind of thing happen.
Redevelopment and reuse is a really important part of cleanup. I think many people used to think, myself included, that once you cleaned up, your job was over. But the fact is, the way we want to look at Superfund sites now is we want to say, okay, we've cleaned it up, so what does it become next? What's the next chapter to be written? What's going to be the end of the story? It's a new ending. Cleanup is no longer the ending.
Not all sites are available for all kinds of use. What we'll do in selecting a remedy, we'll try to look at what the future use is. And in some cases, we'll know that we won't be able to restore a site so that you can have unlimited use.
We are working very diligently with the city because they have redevelopment efforts, and one of the key things about our backfilling and pavement is we want to make sure that we get information from the city related to what type of activities they want to put back on the site so that we can have the soil at the right grading levels that they would need to reduce costs on the redevelopment efforts.
I will not tolerate some bare piece of ground that had dust swirls on it with a fence around it. We will find the money and construct a major recreational facility that will include an indoor pool and basketball courts and weight rooms and so on, as well as an outside area for basketball and soccer and so on.
A lot of reuse has to do with having lots of discussions with lots of different people and explaining not only why this is a good idea, but also answering people's questions. You know, most people, when they hear this was a Superfund site or is being cleaned up as a Superfund site, they say, oh, gee, is it safe? And so I think a lot of our job is reassuring people that it is safe as long as the uses are appropriate and we do what we're supposed to do with the site.
One of the difficulties of a Superfund process is it's lengthy, and there seems to be no way to speed it up. As much as you'd like to get it over with tomorrow, you have got to stay committed to it. You can't throw up your hands and walk away and give up. You just cannot.
It's a very local issue, and you have to have a lot of discussions with people to figure out, you know, how do we do this? What is it that's going to work best for this community?
We have not always. We have not always agreed.
We have had a kind of leadership that we consider is second to none for this kind of thing.
I'm as results-oriented as anybody in the world. But I also know that as difficult as the process has been, it's brought this town together in a lot of ways. It's brought the town together in a lot of ways.
Well, I'm proud of everyone who was involved, absolutely. It took all of us to make this happen.
In amongst all of the difficulties we've had, and we've had our challenges, but this is really, really, really a success story. And it needs to be told.
20 years ago, people thought, oh, Superfund, that's just the worst of the worst. And nobody really thought there could be a new life for these sites. But in fact, we found through a number of sites, we have over 500 sites now, that you can do something with Superfund sites. So places that were once blights to a community, places that you couldn't imagine there could be anything good ever going on there, I've really been turned around. Superfund is an opportunity to do something new. A cleaned up, reused Superfund site is a way of giving back to a community and turning something that was a problem into an asset.
Okay, so we should have the video done. So again, if you're a presenter, so for example, Angela, you're welcome to turn the volume down on your computer. And if you want to come off of mute and just let me know that you're back on the line.
I'm back on.
Okay, excellent. And I think, Angela, you had another comment that you wanted to share for the video?
I did. I just wanted, you can see from the video that it truly takes a tribe to have such a great success story. So, you know, if you're a new RPM, if you're a new CIC, I really encourage you to take the time to spend in your communities and sit in living rooms and eat ginger snaps and drink coffee and just find your tribe and really work together to change the world just one Superfund site at a time.
That is great, Angela. Thank you so much for sharing your perspective and for that video. I hate to move on, but I will for right now, and we'll get back later for questions. But I want to talk a little bit about reuse information and tools for EPA and communities. Okay. So there are some specific community involvement tools available to help you think about reuse. The Reuse and Redevelopment Planning Document and the 2016 Superfund Community Involvement Handbook. And both of these documents are available in the resources area on your screen. And also, SRI has a wide variety of reuse information tools and documents that are helpful both for you as a CIC, but also for communities. And the Reuse and Redevelopment Planning Community Involvement tool I mentioned is designed specifically to explain how EPA can help communities with reuse and redevelopment planning and integrate it across community involvement activities. SRI also has a number of site-specific documents as well as a general reuse, as well as general reuse information that cover a wide variety of topics and reuse types. And all of these documents can be accessed in the resources sidebar of Adobe Connect on your webinar screen. And the SRI documents are also located on the SRI website. And you can feel free to reach out and use those, or we can send you information. That website has a lot of information. I encourage you all to take a look. So you might wonder why we have all this information. We get this question a lot. We have a lot of material. But why do we have it? And I think the most important reason is that what we do, reuse information that we track, is vital to our mission, and it also helps fulfill many internal and external information needs. So some of these opportunities are listed on the slide, but there are always new and creative applications for this information. We get a lot of questions from senior management, from outside people. When people have to testify, it helps internally and externally. It helps with regional managers who then recognize all the work that goes on. We give internal awards, newspapers and magazines. We try to get positive stories. Local governments are looking for inspiration. I think when you're a community confronted with a Superfund site, you might feel all alone, and we are there to tell you, boy, you are not alone, and other people have gone through this and come through it. So, yeah, it's very useful information. So I want to just take a minute and talk about how CICs are involved. There are a lot of ways for CICs to get involved, both in terms of helping communities at the sites they support and helping EPA staff and communities in other areas to learn from their experiences. So both are very important. And CICs get involved by suggesting sites to SRI coordinators for projects or write-ups. They assist with reviews or meetings between stakeholders to capture stories. They participate in reuse planning and reuse assessments. And they share their expertise in training and webinars. And the photos here on the slide are from one of the SRI local economic impact case studies. It was done on the San Fernando Valley Superfund site in Region 9. And this case study looks at the Burbank operable units cleanup and reuse, and it illustrates the beneficial effects of Superfund redevelopment. And just some of the highlights are that over 3 billion gallons of contaminated groundwater are treated and returned to the municipal water supply each year, which saves the municipality almost $6 million a year. And also that site businesses employ over 5,500 people, which provides an estimated annual employment income of over $350 million, and it generates nearly $1 billion in annual sales revenue. And properties at the former Lockheed Martin facility are currently valued at $1.2 billion and generate $12.5 million in annual property tax revenues. So I know this has been a lot of information to digest, but after folks learn about SRI and what the reuse process can do for communities, the next question is, so how do you get all those pieces to come together and help a community see the light at the end of the tunnel for the site? So I just want to talk for a minute about some specific information about how to do that. So the question SRI asked a lot that people ask SRI is, how do I get the pieces to come together when we're sort of, we can't really see the light at the end of the tunnel. So one of the tools we have is something called regional seeds, and these are one of headquarters' best, most flexible tools for supporting reuse. So I want to just talk a little bit about what headquarters looks for when determining whether to award a regional seed, what they expect from the region, how to apply for the money, and what makes a worthwhile project. But I want you to remember that these tools aren't just extra work. They can inform your activities in a positive way that then result in better community engagement for better site cleanup. So a regional seed is what headquarters calls the initial funds to start a reuse project. And each year, we set aside a limited number of resources to provide these regional seeds to communities or specific stakeholders. Now, many sites that have some reuse potential are vacant, or they're abandoned due to a lack of knowledge about the remedy components or the range of potential safe future uses and the key steps that players need to make the transformation to reuse. So the regional seed concept provides an initial investment to bring the right stakeholders to the table, to clarify the remedy constraints, and outline suitable reuse options for the local community to pursue. So there's no one-size-fits-all tool for reuse, and there's no one-size-fits-all regional seed. But the most important element is making sure that the project shows or underscores the connection between EPA's mission of protecting human health and the environment and thinking about reuse. Now, ideally, the regions contribute the remaining funds needed to complete the project, but in some instances, other entities have offered funding, such as cities or PRPs. So SRI provides several different types of reuse planning services through the assistance of a national contractor with expertise in the reuse of contaminated sites. And these projects thoughtfully and thoroughly engage communities. They provide key information that informs agency decision-making regarding site cleanup and potential Superfund redevelopment opportunities. And the projects lay the foundation for new reuses, leading to strengthened local economies and much-needed community amenities. So one way to think about regional seeds is they're a really nice way to get you started if you're a little scared. Okay. So to satisfy the wide range of planning needs, SRI can support situation assessments, and this explores whether further reuse planning assistance would be valuable, and it makes initial observation on the reuse potential site. And this exercise requires a lower level of effort than reuse assessments or reuse plans. Because if you were to do a situational assessment and realize that what people have in mind is just not reasonable for any number of reasons, we would still consider that a good use of resources because we wouldn't want people to sort of move ahead and then in the end say, oh no, we can't do this. So even if the answer isn't always what we want, we think it's important to investigate. We can also do reuse assessments, which determine a range of suitable potential uses for a site, and that'll inform the cleanup process and local planning efforts. And the reuse assessment is a critical component of the cleanup process. And formally or informally, these should be done for every NPL site. We can also do reuse plans, which outline specific locations and uses for the site based on additional stakeholder discussions and analysis. And this phase may include developing several scenarios for consideration or outlining more detailed considerations for a single scenario for stakeholder review, discussion, and refinement. And community engagement is an integral part. It's an integral part of each phase of the reuse planning process and ranges broadly in scope. So some examples of community engagement activities include contacting key stakeholders, forming and facilitating an advisory committee, and hosting a public open house to gather stakeholder input. All right. So I'd like to talk about some examples of other kinds of available regional seeds. We have a wide variety of tools, and these include videos, case studies, technical reports, comfort letters, environmental status reports, also called Ready for Reuse Determinations, which is a tool that talks about how a site's been characterized and cleaned up and what kind of reuse it can support. This has been very helpful in a community that, for example, wanted to place a playground on a cleaned up site, and the community was very nervous about it, but this RFR sort of carried the day. We have also provided support activities for alternative energy and green remediation assessments, have included projects such as assessing the feasibility of renewable energy technologies, developing preliminary renewable energy system size estimates based on what's going on at the site, identifying a preliminary set of applicable incentives, and developing preliminary financial information regarding the various energy systems. But community engagement is an integral part of each phase of the planning process, and it ranges broadly in scope. And some examples include, as I said, getting in touch with key stakeholders, forming advisory committees, and hosting public forums. Okay. So you may be asking, how do I request a regional seat? And if you have a site that might benefit, please contact the SRI coordinator in your region. They can discuss the project with you, and they can convene appropriate members of the site team to scope out what the nature of the support might be. And then the SRI coordinator will then present the project idea to headquarters for consideration. And headquarters will consider the project, and if approved, ask the regions to fill out the SRI regional seed kickoff communication summary form. It's a fairly straightforward form. So I think that is the formal part of our presentation. I'd like to sort of go back and try to take some of our questions now that have been coming in. And I'd like to start with Angela and Jennifer. And I'm wondering if you first, Angela, and then Jennifer, it sounds like you both had RPMs that were very on board with this like, strange idea of reuse. But what kinds of suggestions can you provide for sites where the RPM may not be open to engaging in reuse discussions? How would you suggest people proceed? And then after you, I'll ask Fran as a very pro-reuse RPM. So, Angela, you want to go first?
I'm trying to answer, find a diplomatic way to answer that question. You know, I've just been lucky. I've never had pushback. And I think if the RPM can see how, I don't know. I know what I want to say, but I can't put it into words.
Okay, well, let's go to Jennifer, and then maybe we can come back to you. Yeah. Jennifer, do you have some thoughts about this?
You know, I think the only thing I can really come up with is that if it comes up organically through the community, the more educated they are about the opportunities for reuse and just by sharing information. So this, I think we can do education about these tools. And I think if the community learns that, they might make a request. But, I mean, our job is to share information about the different tools that we have to support them. So I think that's all we can do. If the project manager is not supportive, it's our job to just make sure we're sharing all the tools in the toolbox.
And, you know, it was one of Jennifer's points to make sure that you have people that mesh well with the community.
You mean what kind of people? You mean like EPA people?
Yes, I think it was one of her, the technical. Mm-hmm. Isn't that what you have listed, Jennifer? Make sure that your technical people mesh well?
Yes, I think the context was a little bit more about if you're going to bring in outside experts as part of reuse, make sure that your community is supportive of those people before you just bring in an outside visitor. But yeah, I think that's always true. But sadly, we don't always have say over, you know, if personalities are not working well with the community, we don't really have a lot of opportunity on that one.
Fran, can I ask you to weigh in here as an RPM?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So first of all, one thing I find over and over again, if an RPM experiences this at one of their sites, they are sold forever on. They become another advocate because they see the power of this and how it just changes the dynamics. So we've had RPMs have been hesitant or unsure. You know, the things that come up are, do they think the community is going to want something that they can't deliver because they know the cleanup is going to restrict a part of the site? And so they're afraid to even start the dialogue. But as we find over and over again on Superfund sites, as long as you are as honest as you can be, I mean, you may not have all the data, so you can't actually talk about ultimately what you can do, but as long as you are honest and forthright and keep people informed, it moves the conversation along. And then when an RPM sees, and I think CICs as well, when they see actually what changes about the site and changes how people are responding, community, local stakeholders, local officials, even congressional officials, it actually is magical, and it changes the whole dialogue. I haven't seen it not work at a site yet. For the RPMs that are very hesitant, or sometimes they really have so much on their plate that they don't have the bandwidth to think about this, I try to help them understand how it will help inform things that they have to do, like their risk assessment or like their sampling methods, so they can see why it's going to be useful to them. And then I work with someone like Jennifer or Angela to help them see how we can get this done in a way that is less work intensive for the RPM. So, you know, those are some of the factors that I try to work through.
That's great. And Angela, did you have anything you wanted to add at this point?
No, that was perfect. We should have started with Fran.
Okay, I got another question.
Melissa, there's one other thing I wanted to add, if I could.
Sure.
All the resources that you already mentioned on our website, you know, so often we can direct community members or local officials to that, and they start seeing what were the possibilities on all those other sites, and it sparks their imagination. I think Jennifer mentioned that too, and so I can't say enough about our resources, whether they're the videos or the case studies. It really makes a difference.
Well, this is Jennifer. If I can chime in once more, it also just brings up another related situation we have at a different Superfund site in Region 8 that Fran and I are currently working on, and that's Nelson Tunnel. We have a property owner who owns these historic mining structures that are at risk of falling down, and they're stunning. They're in an incredible backdrop with mountains and vistas. But the property owner doesn't want to let go of the property, so we're actually in the process of beginning a situation
assessment
because we're thinking that's going to help the property owner along with local stakeholders better understand options on how to shake something loose, because it's a part of this is education for everybody about what else can we do to help move this forward and have reuse happen for this beautiful, beautiful spot next to the mine that we're doing lots of work on. Yep. So,
you know, that's great, Jennifer, and that's actually a segue to one of our questions, that if you flip that around, what if you have a landowner, a property owner, who's really gung-ho on reuse, but the rest of the community says, I hate that idea. That's really awful. What do you think are some ways that you might be able to manage that?
I think we've managed the different expectations and different wants through the visioning process. Of course, EPA doesn't own the property.
Right.
And we also don't control local land use, planning, and zoning. So having that dialogue, that was happening at one of our sites in central Colorado, where some of the community members wanted a certain thing. The owner of the property wanted something else, which of course involved as little money as possible. And going through the visioning process that we did using one of the regional seeds, it became apparent, and actually one of the leaders of the citizens group came to us and said afterwards, I didn't realize with this much acreage that we could each have all that we wanted if we all worked together. And now actually they are working to redevelop the property. It's also still going through a media investigation, so there'll be some time with that. But it did change the dialogue greatly.
Great. Anybody else want to weigh in there? Okay. So this question, I guess, is for all three of you, but especially Jennifer and Angela. So did somebody sort of make a conscious decision that at point A we are going to do reuse planning, or did it kind of happen? Can you talk a little bit about how that worked out at your sites, maybe starting with Jennifer, and then we'll go to Angela?
You know, at Libby, I don't really feel like there was just a moment that I could identify that it happened. I would say a lot of it was organic. Riverfront Park happened before I was involved with the site. There was a tail end there when I came on board. With the industrial park turning it into a business park, I think what happened was we knew that the director, executive director of the board for the park was very, very frustrated and couldn't get her board members to make a decision or come to agreement on how to use the land and how to move forward. And so in talking with her, our project manager also was really interested in doing visioning or something with reuse, because we were weighed down with ICs. As you all know, we can have a really hard time. We can struggle in some communities for many years with ICs. And our project manager, this is a case where the project manager, we had a lot of them at the Libby site, but this particular project manager thought, you know what, if we can do some reuse work, this might turn things around and make it a more positive discussion, and the community can start to see the future. So there was just all this energy that came together from different places that was all related to reuse, and it was like, yeah, why not? But then it took us probably 6 months to figure out exactly what was the magic bullet, what exactly should we do? And then that one didn't really work quite to where we wanted to. We got the ideas on paper, but there was still this overwhelming feeling, so we needed to hone in even further, and that's when we delivered the action plan. But it was truly an organic process.
Great, thanks. Angela, any thoughts on sort of how it started and what
made
it happen?
Well, we met, the Wolf Oak Alliance met so often. We communicated about everything. I mean, we literally met from 10 to 2 or 3, you know, every 4 to 6 weeks. So we talked about everything. And when the record of decision was signed, we started talking about, you know, cleanup, and then we started talking about reuse, and then how we could design our cleanup to help them out in the reuse phase. So I agree with Jennifer. It was just kind of organic, the magic started.
Mm-hmm. Fran, any thoughts you'd like to share?
Yeah, in my experience, it varies. I had one site where my very first meeting, the city told me that their goal was reuse. Nobody else at the table, including the property owner, were thinking that way, but they knew that right from the start, and it ended up happening. Other sites, it's where, you know, we're really bogged down. Jennifer gave the institution control example, but it could be people are just stressed about what it means for property values. And, you know, that's when I usually put my SRI coordinator hat on and suggest that maybe this is a vehicle to help out. So it can happen all sorts of different ways. And I think EPA's position that we have to be in is being ready to hear wherever the community and that project is at, and thinking of how we can best respond to help with the situation.
Great. So I have another question that might be a little sensitive, but I think it's really important, and that is, can a CIC do this whole thing on their own? And I'm going to ask the three of you to answer that. Jennifer, why don't we start with you?
Oh, wow. I would say I couldn't do it without Fran. She's sitting here with me. Well, I think the answer to that question is, I think that it is possible to coordinate and be, I mean, clearly the CIC can be the lead on this project, and I think it is important for the CIC, wherever they are comfortable, to do so. obviously you need your project manager on board and engaged, and obviously you have to have the right support, and in this case, if you have a seed and you get support from SKIA, whoa, that's pretty huge. They have been instrumental. Couldn't have done it without them, and they make it so easy because they're exceptional at what they do and really good at helping us to prepare. And when you actually have an event, I just found them to be amazing at helping you to be organized and pull it all together. So I think that is possible for the CIC.
Okay. Yeah, Andrea, Angela, you want to talk about your experience? Could you lead this charge by yourself?
I certainly couldn't have done it without Charles. As far as getting the ball rolling, yes, but I couldn't have done it. I couldn't have done it without Charles.
Okay, and Charles, your RPM.
Yes, he is. I'm sorry. Yes.
No, that's all right. Okay, and Fran, you want to put the finishing touches on this answer?
Sure. I would say not only does the RPM need to be involved and the CIC, but in many cases also the site attorney. That's sort of the third leg of the stool, because we may have to do some legal agreement, whether it's a comfort letter or some other type of agreement. And so different parts of us can take the lead, like the second visioning workshop at Libby, Jennifer did almost all the heavy lifting, including calling all those economic development experts and being so energetic that they all just agreed to drive through the snowstorm and come to this event on their own dime. And, you know, I depend on her for stuff like that because that's certainly not my skill set. But then what we had to do ultimately is we had to figure out with the site RPM how to coordinate it back into the remedy. And then, you know, there's also legal components, like with the institutional control. So while one of us can use our strengths to carry on a certain part, I think on most sites it's going to take all three of those to actually bring it home.
That's great, Fran. And speaking of bringing it home, I'd like to give you, the three of you, sort of one last chance to talk about any last thoughts you have or anything else you'd like to share. So why don't we start with Jennifer, and then Angela, and then Fran. So Jennifer?
You know, I think the only thing I would say parting is that it's really, don't be afraid to try this. Don't be afraid to really try and come up with a project and work with your project manager and your team and your community, because it's such interesting work. It's such positive work. It's such important work. It's what we do. We owe this to the community. They go through so much. It's such a roller coaster, the work we do. And to be able to have something to wrap up with a bow toward the end and, you know, have them really bring this community back to life, it's really special.
Great. Angela, last thoughts?
I totally agree. We do owe it. We do owe it to the community. It's not, you know, like in Woolfolk, they didn't cause the issue, and, you know, they deserved better than what they had, and you have the opportunity to help make things better for them, and it's very rewarding, and, you know, work hard with your team, and like Fran said, each of you can take different leads and work together. And I mean, the proof is the Life After Superfund video, and it's very rewarding.
And Angela, you've done reuse at other sites too, right? And so you've talked to people about that.
Yes, we have. And Camilla, we have a RV park and ball field, soccer field. I can't think of the other ones. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right.
But it is. But you know, it's so awesome to know that you have the opportunity to really help these people. I mean, you hear when you start out in the RIFS stage and you're doing community interviews and you're hearing these horrible stories of this plant right across the street, And, you know, I literally cry with some of these people. And then, you know, years later, you're at that same place and you're actually celebrating because they have a beautiful park to go walk in and, you know, walk their grandkids across the street to go play soccer. It's just, it doesn't get better than that.
That's great. And Fran, final thoughts?
Yeah, I think, you know, what I encourage people to do is if they have a question or situation and they're not sure, go talk to your regional SRI coordinator. See if they, we all know our tools well and what we have available. We also use each other all the time. So I, you know, one of us will send the other SRI coordinators, has anyone had this situation? Can they think of ideas what to do? We, of course, also include Melissa and Frank in headquarters in that. And, you know, the collective amount of knowledge can sometimes really help. So, and we, Melissa, this is usually your line, but we don't think we've run across all the types of reuse and all the different scenarios. And we're looking to see what the next thing is that we can help blossom.
That's great, Fran. I couldn't have said that better myself. All right, so I think I'm going to turn it back over to Jean, and I want to thank our presenters, and I want to thank Jean for whatever technical magic she did and pulled us out there. That was just great, and thank you all for staying with us. I know it was there were some rough patches there, but I'm really glad you hung in. So, Jean, I'm turning it over to you now, and you can close us out.
Thank you, and I want to echo my thanks to all of the presenters and you, Melissa, as well as the participants who were patient with me. I now have many more gray hairs, but we made it through, and I can confirm again that the entire session was recorded. I apologize for that brief disruption, but if you did miss anything, don't worry. You'll be able to replay it. Just wanted to remind everyone that if you're interested in sessions like this or information about Superfund redevelopment, we do have information on the Cleanup Information Network, and I encourage you, if you're looking for other free online seminars, to sign up for our free monthly newsletter, Tech Direct, that goes out on the first of each month, and we list information about hazardous waste site cleanup in there. Copies of the presentation material are available to download from the seminar resources page. There's also a link to a SRI tool as well as the video that was played back today. So if you are in the webinar environment, if you look on the middle right, you'll see a link to something called Seminar Resources under my picture. You can click that and then press the Browse to button to open it up. Contact information for our presenters and organizers is also contained on the seminar homepage. You are certainly welcome to reach out to almost all of us. Melissa, I'm not going to let you off the hook. I would sadly normally be telling you all that you could reach out to Melissa Friedland if you have any other SRI questions, but Melissa is going to be retiring soon, and hopefully, Michelle, you can come off of mute and embarrass her a lot by we all clap and wish Melissa a ton of good luck in her future retirement. Woo-hoo! And thank her, yay, for many amazing years of service. So although she may not be here months from now, if you reach out to one of the other speakers or even myself, we'll be able to work with you to make sure we can get you connected with the appropriate SRI contact. And then, of course, as always, we'd ask if you could take just a brief moment to fill out our online feedback form. One of the most common questions I get is if you can get a certificate for joining us. And if you fill out the online feedback form for today's session, you can get a certificate once you submit that feedback form in. Just be sure to check the box that you were here for the entire session. Even if you had technical difficulties in the beginning and you were unable to get in for that early part, that is okay. Go ahead and check the box. And then you should be able to submit your feedback form in, and we'll have a copy that you can either save or print out for your own records. If you joined as a group, each person can fill out that same feedback form. Even if you didn't register individually, you'll just need to get the link from the person who did sign up. And if you can get the link to that feedback form from them, you can complete the form on your own and get your own certificate, even if you didn't register individually. And as noted, today's session in its entirety, despite those technical issues, was recorded, and you'll automatically get an email as soon as that archived version is available for on-demand playback. And we do have lots of other previously hosted SRI webinars, and I encourage you to browse through the special archives we have and replay other sessions on this topic. So with that, I'll go ahead and formally conclude today's live broadcast. We hope that you all found this to be a valuable expenditure of your time, and we'll have you back on for another webinar in the future. This will be the formal conclusion for today's live.